So happy that my last interview of the year is somebody I enjoy talking to immensely, Susana Mendoza, Comptroller, State of Illinois. Hi, Susana. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well, and good morning to everyone, and happy new year to be here. I don't think I've ever been this excited to put a year behind us.
I really do. There's two things that hit me in a profound way. New Year's is a big deal for me in many ways. I don't know why. One is I always, the friends that I've lost over the year. And the other is that this will be a better year moving forward. I like it, lines of demarcation where I can say, okay, I'm going to start playing better on the game now that we've got this point. I'm going to do better. I love that part of my life that's saying, all right, that's over, start again.
Yeah, for sure. No doubt. It's like a cleansing for the soul, right? I mean, it gives you an opportunity, like you said, to kind of clean your slate. Whatever happened in this year that you want to put behind you, just bury it deep and, try to start anew. I think the new year does that for hopefully it does it for a lot of people. And yeah. I certainly hope that 2021 is a year of rebirth and we can put all this negativity and honestly death behind us.
Describe to me, and from your point of view, Illinois' current financial situation as we close the books in our minds on 2020.
Yeah, well, I would say that our financial situation is a difficult one. Obviously, before COVID-19 hit, we were still going through difficulties. You recall the first time I spoke to you, right? We probably had a bill backlog close to $17 billion. And over the first 2 years of my term, we were battling not having a budget. Then the first 2 years of my reelection have been more about paying down the state's backlog of unpaid bills and leveraging every financial tool available in the books for me to be able to stabilize our state's finances and move us forward. Then we were finally getting out of the woods. I think one of the last interviews I had with you prior to COVID, we were talking about the credit markets were looking at Illinois more favorably. We hadn't had any kind of credit downgrades. We were moving in the right direction. We weren't out of the woods yet, but we could see some light between the trees. And then, Tom, boom, COVID-19 hits, and all of the advances that we had made, quickly got erased. And Illinois, along with every other state in the country, saw itself with a massive financial hole that had been blown into our revenues, and revenues being, of course, tax dollars coming into the state. Coming from things like, people being employed or people spending money in entertainment or travel. And all of those things, of course, went to the wayside because we had this deadly pandemic that we had to just be much more cautious. People had to work from home if they were lucky enough to work from home, and many people lost their jobs. And so that means less revenue coming into the state. And like I said, it's not something that's just unique to Illinois. All 50 states are in this situation. What is more unique to Illinois is the fact that we were woefully unprepared to weather a financial downturn, much less a global pandemic, and we had no money in a rainy day fund to kind of help us make ends meet. So we're still in a situation where we need to rely on federal financial help. It hasn't come yet. We're hoping that we will see some soon. And I'll remind people that we're not asking for a bailout. We're not asking for federal money to help us fix the mistakes of the past, whether it's, pension deficits or stuff like that. I want to make sure that taxpayers understand that the money that we're asking for is to make up specifically for the revenues that were lost as a direct result of the COVID pandemic. And it's the same thing that, every state is going to have to be asking for. And it doesn't matter if you're a red state or a blue state. It's not about rewarding states for their mistakes prior. We're just asking to please help us fill the hole that was blown into our financial picture because we don't have enough revenues coming into the state, and we still have things like universities and healthcare to pay for.
Yeah. And what's interesting is talking to people in Washington, my understanding is they are making stipulations in any proposed money that would go to state or local government that it couldn't be used for instance, pensions. Here's the thing about when it comes to COVID costs, I spent your time on your website, and I want to see if you can help me out here. I've got two figures that I'm looking at. I've got COVID-19 related spending, which is over, looks $450 million. And then I've got another COVID spender. There's two graphs on your page. It says cumulative spending, but it says $3 billion.
$3 billion.
That's why I'm looking at it, because I'm looking at it sideways. I'm getting wrong. So it's $3,123.59 million. Okay. Is that right?
Yeah, and you know what's awesome about what you just said is that you're looking on my website, because we're probably one of the only states right now in the country that even reports this information, and we're definitely the only state that reports it as detailed as we do, and I'm very, very proud of that. We've actually gotten national recognition for the transparency that Illinois has towards its COVID-19 related spending. So you can see, like, up to the penny what's gone out the door and where it's gone and why it's been utilized.
Yeah, see, but I'm looking over the side graph and it says 3.000 mil. So that, and then you've
got, because it's telling you that we're counting it in millions.
Okay.
The graph.
And then,
right.
Okay, now I get it. And then that's why I'm seeing the related spending at another column then.
Yeah, so if you're counting, you're not counting in like hundreds, you're counting by the millions. Mm-hmm. So then when we say 3,123.59 million,
gotcha.
That means 3.1 billion.
All right. Yeah. Now I understand what I'm seeing here. So we're $3 billion. And then another $4.5 million in related spending as well. I'm curious, from your point of view,
if you scroll down on the website, do
right.
you see that we detail how it's being spent?
Yes, I'm
so
seeing
you
that now.
In, and then you'll see like who the vendors are that got the money,
right?
Like City yep. of Dixon, City of Mattoon, and you know what it's going for.
Oh, there's even the money from the Cure Money that was going out here.
Exactly.
Acyon, Illinois, at Cure Money at $29,570,000, I think something like that. The Cure Money, another issue.
Yeah, if you're a total data nerd, you're going to love our website. So
yeah.
It's great. I just think it's important to for the transparency. I always say transparency is like the quickest way to restoring trust in government. Clearly, government and politicians certainly suffer from a lack of trust, and I think, you know, people deserve to know how their money's being spent, so that's why we did this. And we did it in the middle of the pandemic when it was difficult to do so, and just the fact that people have noticed it, certainly at the national level, and said, hey, why aren't other states doing this? And people say, well, it's too hard. Well, look, Illinois did it, so I'm just very proud of it. If we can do it, anybody can do it, and they should do it.
There's never a time that I get ready to speak with you that I don't go to the website and look at the backlog voucher report. That's no news to you. And this is the lowest number I've seen in a long time, $4,967,894,504.86. Is the reason that it's that low, and people go, what do you mean that's low? It is considered a past numbers, is because we borrowed $4.432 billion to be able to help address some of these issues. And this is short-term borrowing from the Fed. Is that right?
Bingo. That's correct. So, and I do stipulate that, right? So if you you look at it there, it says it does not include $4.4 billion in short-term borrowing that's required to be repaid. Part of that's going to be repaid next April and May, and the rest of it is over a three-year period. But this is the lowest that we've gotten it. And those, just so you know, it's so critical that we keep paying down this bill backlog. And that's why I put that in the little tiny writing, because I don't want anyone to think that, hey, look, the bill backlog's $4.9 billion. And just to put it in perspective for your audience, when the state of Illinois gets its bill backlog down to about $3 billion, that's really no longer going to be a bill backlog, because it's about $3 billion every day just to operate the state of Illinois. That's our normal operating expenses. But, you know, I'm very detailed as to how much money or how much debt we're ever carrying in terms of our bills that have yet to be paid. So
yeah.
It's like in your household. You always have debt, you know, but it's normal debt because you're going to pay your bill at the end of the month.
Right.
And that's where we want to get. And when we get down to $3 billion, that's where we'll be. However, we do have this, you know, almost $4.5 billion that have to be repaid. But we use every one of those pennies of the money that we borrowed to pay down medical health care bills that also give us federal matching dollars. So we borrowed $2 billion the other day. I'm going to turn that $2 billion into closer to $3.5 billion by leveraging federal matching dollars. And then using, once we're done paying every single bill that gives us a federal match, then we're going to use the federal match to pay down bills that are accruing late payment interest penalties. And that way we're saving money for taxpayers. So I know it may sound kind of boring. I think it's exciting, but rest assured, we're doing everything we can to stretch every single dollar just the way people do at home to make ends meet as best as possible. And we'll eventually pay that back. But I want the legislature to look at that number and not get excited that we're not just $5 billion in the hole here. We're about $9 billion in the hole. And any new revenue that comes into the state has to be utilized to help pay down those bills.
What are the ramifications of the failure of fair tax?
They're huge. I mean, honestly, Tom, they're huge because a fair tax is going to help us to close, or I should say fix, our structural deficit that we have. And by that, I mean that every year, no matter if the legislature tried on paper to balance a budget, we don't have enough revenue coming in to meet our core, you know, all the obligations that we have. And so it is likely that without the revenue from the fair tax, you're going to see dramatic cuts. And you're going to see them in places where you would think are sacrosanct, right? Like education or public safety, healthcare. We just don't have enough money coming in to meet those core obligations every year. And even if you cut in areas, which you should, I would argue that before you ask taxpayers to pay more money in something, we should see everywhere that we can cut reasonably and make those cuts. Because, I mean, of course, there's always inefficiencies, right? My office, every year since I've been controller, we've led by cutting 10% of our budget compared to the prior controller's office. And so actually the lowest budget in 20 years of controllers. So you do what you can within your own realm. And I would say at the agency level, we have to look everywhere that can be cut. But even if you cut everywhere you can, I promise you, you won't even come close to filling the hole that needs to be bridged. And this is pre-COVID. We've had about a $3 to $4 billion structural deficit. So I should say $3 to $5 billion. So getting that $3.5 billion come in from the fair tax would have helped significantly. And it would have made it possible. You know, the thing is that people kept saying, oh, you're going to get this tax cut. It was such a small, tiny tax cut that you're not going to really feel it. But I'd certainly rather pay less than pay more. And I wanted people to pay less than to pay more. But ultimately, you know, what happens, how they come up with the revenue is not going to be painless. And that's the sad part for me, that, you know, by voting down this tax increase for the rich, really for the top 3% of Illinoisans, the wealthiest Illinoisans, it is likely that at some point in the near future, you're going to see everybody have to pay more, and that's the last thing that we wanted to see. So yeah. It's unfortunate, but the money still has to be raised somewhere.
Yeah,
we were hoping it would be people like Governor Pritzker and, you know, Ken Griffin to pay more, since they can definitely afford it, versus, you know, mom and pop to
but
pay more.
They can still pay more if they want to. If they want to, they can pay more. They can send you a check.
Sure, yeah. I'm highly doubtful that'll happen, Yeah, it's a bummer, but we still need to come up with the money. The question for that fair tax was who's going to pay it. And I think, you know, moving away from a flat tax would have been the fair thing to do. It was a mistake when it happened 50 years ago. We had an opportunity to correct that mistake. And, you know, the cost of a gallon of milk is the same to a person in Southern Illinois who's unemployed right now than it is to, you know, a Ken Griffin who's got more money than he'll ever know what to do with in his life. I mean, he could live like 100 lives and still not spend all his money in extreme wealth. But that gallon of milk, you know, it's like he doesn't even know what that costs, right? So it is a big deal when you consider what that gallon of milk as a percentage of income to a person versus a wealthy person really means. And that is why a fair tax that taxes us all the same is actually unfair. In principle.
You know, earlier this week, I was speaking with one of the managers for a recreational marijuana company here in Southern Illinois. And prior to that, I'd done a little looking into the numbers on how much money was generated by recreational marijuana sales and medical marijuana sales. And what was interesting is I learned is how much more Illinois made than had been originally projected, and how much more they'd made in the first year as opposed to other states like Colorado. I mean, Illinois has done well with marijuana. Do you have a final figure on what marijuana has contributed to the coffers of the state of Illinois?
I don't have the final figure yet, but we were very pleasantly surprised. I mean, it almost like, I hate to get excited about having, you know, marijuana revenue, but I'll tell you what, it was a lifesaver for us. You know, that marijuana revenue allowed me to leverage significant payments to the pharmacies downstate. At a time when they needed it most. I mean, you know, Critical Access Pharmacy Program has really been one of the key beneficiaries to that medical marijuana revenue coming in. So it's still a priority for me. We want to make sure that independent pharmacies in places like Carterville and Daquan are able to keep their doors open. You know, people in rural communities rely very heavily on these pharmacies for their frontline health care. And that's why they're very important to me. They're more important than ever, I would say, as we continue to weather this pandemic. And that's why I'm so excited, actually, that these marijuana revenues have come in as well as they have, because we've been able to access those dollars and put them towards the critical access pharmacy program.
Yeah, well, a couple of $100 million here and there has got to help. I got a question that came in interesting, because I struggle with this sometimes, too. And it says, hey, Tom, could you ask Susanna if there is a website public can go to get a simple look at the state's finances? That's a hard one.
Well, I mean, I think our website's probably the best place to do it. You can, like I said, you can look at pretty much every single voucher, or like if you're a vendor, is this person a vendor or just a taxpayer?
It's just somebody who's curious, wants to know about how much we spend here and there. Because, because I do this, because you and I could say, and I've argued with JB about this too, and when he was in the studio, like how much we owe. And he's, no, we don't owe that much, you know, and we were talking about pensions. And, well, how much? Well, when I do the figures and I get up there, I don't have a problem being conservative. The state of Illinois owes around $211 billion here and there.
Yeah, you're going in a conservative approach, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so you'll see, like, it's some of the different rating agencies that they have different numbers for what the ultimate payment is.
Yes.
The thing people need to understand, though, Tom, is that whether it's 150 or 200 plus billion on the pensions, is that no one expects that money to be paid overnight. It's not like it's coming due tomorrow. I think what would be helpful to us as a state is to make a commitment to paying more into the principal of those pensions.
Right.
Because what you find is everybody's just talking about how big that pension debt is, yet we're not adding any more to the principal on that debt, right? So it keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
You know what's interesting, Susanna? And after talking to you, you know, and I've watched this very closely. The people who invest for the pensions, they promise we're going to make this X amount by investment, and then we don't, but we plan on it anyway. And I know that's not your ballywick, but I watched that, and that irritates the living hell out of me. Oh, we're going to do this, and we're going to make this much, and they make like one quarter of it. And I'm thinking, how can we, because we're planning on this, and we just don't seem to make the money back like we're supposed to, or what they even say they can do. That bothers me.
Yeah, the expected return, you mean.
Yes, right.
I'll tell you what, though. This year, the pensions performed pretty well. Like Illinois State Board of Investments, they met all their, for the most part, their goals, and they were one of the top, I think, maybe even three pension returns in the whole country.
Well, that's a change.
Our pension system actually didn't do as bad as you would expect compared to others. Especially during this crisis. I mean, so we had some positive news there, I would say. But again, I think until we start talking less about it and actually paying more into it, that's where we're going to start to see the markets kind of calm down a little bit about our pensions. And remember, it's over, you know, the pensions are going to be paid out over the next 30, 40, 50 years. But when people only pay the minimum on their credit cards, what happens? The debt blows up, right?
Yep, right.
And Illinois has essentially only been paying the minimum on its pensions, and in between that had skipped pension payments, right? Which is like a massive hit. So even once they started paying them religiously again, they were only, and we continue to make the statutory payments on pensions. I've never missed a pension payment. I will never miss a pension payment. But it would be great to see the General Assembly and the government structure make a commitment that beyond the minimum, here's how much we're going to be putting into pensions every year. Dedicate specific revenues to paying down principal on those pensions. And that action alone, I think, would give the markets a lot of confidence that we're serious about paying this thing down and that they will at some point become solvent, because it is a major, major issue that has to be tackled. But I think the easiest way to start is by whatever, you know, we've got, we just talked about the revenues, right? I still have close to like a $9 billion bill backlog. But if we do get financial help from the federal government, I'm able to pay down a large portion of that bill backlog. That has nothing to do with the pension problem. And once we're able to stabilize our finances, then any new additional revenues could be put towards things like paying down principal on pensions. This is where it would have been great to have that fair tax, because we would have gotten there a lot sooner. And I don't believe that additional tax increases would have been necessary on people. That was one of the big fear things, that, well, if you really don't think that our taxes are going to go up, you're crazy. No, actually, our taxes wouldn't have to go up, because we would have fixed our structural deficit in large part. And then through good fiscal management, the way I've been doing, we would have been able to tell taxpayers, hey, thank you for doing your part, but we don't need you to do any more right now.
Right.
But again, I understand people don't trust the government. And so that was one of the, I think they were not just voting on a tax issue, they were voting on a trust issue. And we certainly did not win on the trust side. And we have to accept that and figure out ways to gain people's trust. And where I'm concerned, I'm doing my part every day. I hope that when people hear me talk about the state's finances, they can see that anything that I'm saying, they can go to my website and I can back it up on there with charts and numbers, and it's all available to the public, because, like I said, it's your money and you deserve to know what's happening to it. I can only tell you about the stuff that's already been spent. Right. I can't tell you when other bills are going to get paid, per se, until we're ready to pay them. But you can see much more about your money under my administration and just on our website alone than has ever been available before to any Illinoisan, and we're very proud of that.
Well, you know, here's the thing, and I've told you this, that I told you I was worried about you. And you're like, what are you worried about? Well, see, here, let me put it in the briefest euphemistic way that I can. I'd give you my wallet. I like you. I trust you. I'd give you my wallet. As long as you've got my wallet, not the legislators, and they decide, because they'll throw you in front of a bus. All they got to do is pass legislation and spend money, and they don't worry about it. You've got to pay the bills in between you and a rock and a hard place, so you can say, look, I will manage the money properly. I don't question that. I do question the legislature's mm-hmm. ability to not put you in a position where you have to pay things that we shouldn't be paying for.
Right. No, I appreciate that. Thank you. It's always nice to have someone who has my back. I will tell you, though, that I'm not a wallflower, so if they try to do stuff like that, you're going to hear about it. And I'll give you an example. Most recently, that $2 billion that we borrowed, we had the authority to borrow up to $5 billion, but I said from the very start that that was a non-starter. There's no way I would approve borrowing any more beyond $2 billion, because we have an obligation to not borrow more than we can pay back. And under my watch, that is not going to happen. So I had a plan for how we could leverage that $2 billion, turn it into closer to $3.5 billion, pay down critical health care bills in the middle of a global pandemic, and not a penny more. Because if we were going to be incurring more debt, that's like dumb debt, as I call it, that just wasn't going to happen on my watch. So it was a non-negotiable thing. So the governor knew that $2 billion was the max that we were going to do. I had a commitment that every new dollar that comes in from federal stimulus will go towards paying down that $2 billion borrowing. We're not going to like stretch this out for all eternity. And then those are the conversations that maybe you guys don't hear on the radio, but they're the ones that happen with this governor, with myself, and you know, there's a clear understanding by the legislature, too, that the controller does get to prioritize how those bills are being paid. So, you know, they're not going to come up with new spending without me throwing a fit over the fact that we still have old spending to pay back.
Good.
So,
well, if you need
really not happening right now. And I promise you, you have my back, but I have your back. And that's my job, and I'm very proud to do it.
Good. If you need some muscle, call me.
Don't worry.
Susana Mendoza.
I got a good gun in my right arm.
Okay, good. That's it's interesting. No, Susana, always a pleasure to talk to you. My last interview of the year, and I'm glad it was with you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Tom. Tom, can I say one more thing?
Sure.
I want to say with, like, through the bottom of my heart that I'm so sorry for the loss of Rich Herod and Mike Mills. You know, my niece is actually dating one of Mike's, I think he's the great uncle to her boyfriend. I wasn't aware of that, believe it or not. And it wasn't until I made a post about how sad I was to hear about Mike passing that she said, hey, Aunt Susanna, guess what? I'm actually dating his great nephew, Grant, who's a great guy. But, you know, it's such an institution down there in Southern Illinois. And Rich Herod, I mean, oh, my goodness, his just being a Hall of Famer over at SIU is so cool. And it's just, this year has taken so much from us, and not just COVID, but but, you know, it's a reminder to be thankful of the things we have. And I'm very thankful that they had such an illustrious, giving and career here in Illinois. And so from the bottom of my heart, I know very true to Southern Illinois, I stand with all of you in sadness for the passing of these two amazing people.